And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Three, two, one. On today's episode of the Glue Guys, Brian and I recorded directly after the Bucks-Nets game. Ugh, painful. But we talked about exactly why was James Harden so intent on feeding Nick Claxton. Steve Nash's decision to start Nick Claxton and Blake Griffin together. We dive into that and we look forward at the upcoming schedule, including the matchup against Ben Simmons, maybe, and the 76ers. Three, two, one. Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Coming up right now is Brian and I's live reaction show that we did on YouTube directly after the Bucks-Nets game. Man, it was a super fun show, even though the game wasn't that fun. I'm so glad to finally have basketball back on our TVs. And before we get started on today's show, just want to say this podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Wow, Brian, Nets basketball. How great is it to have it back, Brian? So good to see you. So good to talk to you after a game. How are you, Brian?
I'm with you. Sorry, I had to adjust something. I am here. I am well. I am, well, I'm not well. I'm actually super triggered and butthurt. that was from start to finish. Starting with the stupid rings and then ending with just a petered out, never could get it going rally that just didn't happen. I mean, it's fine. It's game one, whatever. But it was kind of that was a crummy game, Mike. That was not great.
Yeah, it actually was like... You really don't want to, and David 824 in the chat, fire Nash. Yeah, that probably makes sense. They should fire
solid Nash. Solid take already. Yeah.
Properly weighted this early in the season. Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm a little worried, Brian.
No, you're not. You're not really worried. Stop.
It looks, you know who they could have used out there on the floor? Kyrie Irving. They could have used Kyrie Irving.
Don't invoke him yet.
They could have used someone who was able to get in the paint at will. I mean, obviously Durant could do that, but still at times for Durant, he can't do it all by himself. Harden was good in the first half, not so good in the second half.
They
could have used one of the greatest ball handlers, one of the greatest scorers of his generation. Yeah. And they didn't have him, and they sucked. They suck tonight.
I agree, but part of the issue here was, and there's some good, let's just start like doing some engagement with the chat here.
Yeah.
Sean Goodfriend, a good friend of the show, a good friend of the pod. Patty Mills hit a three right after Smoltz left the stream. Coincidence, I think not. The battle continues between you two, and it will go on for some time. I think that like a big part of what didn't make sense for me for this game was this, and we talked about it pretty heavily in the Discord, shout out to the Discord and in the chat, which is our insistence on feeding Nick Claxton alley-oops to to nowhere, to no end. And the comparison I was talking about was like, it's like in like when you're playing NBA Jam and you really want to get team fire and you're just hoisting up improbable alley-oops And you're hitting like one of every three, maybe you get two in a row, but that third is never happening. It's so far out of reach. That was it. That was all night long with us trying to like that. Nick Claxton, our worst, potentially worst offensive player on the floor, was the focal point of our offense, was a macro strategical problem for us, Mike. Wow. That wasn't good. That was not. So I have some issues with where our heads are at. I don't know who's, it felt like we had made this decision, like we're going to do this and we're going to feed Claxton the ball. And then when it wasn't working, they were like, guys, remember the plan. Don't forget the plan. The plan sucked. You have to move on. The plan is bad.
This wasn't a we decision, Brian. I think it was a James Harden decision. Like James Harden made it his goal in life. I don't know, wait, to make Nick Claxton's life hell or to make him a whole bunch of money because he was going to get 20 points just by being super tall and athletic. My comparison is like Harden was so frustrated by what was happening with Nick Claxton that he was like a dad who was potty training his kid and then his son peed in a plant, like a plant pot. Like just like what's happening? Like with the potty is where you go, not in a plant. Mm.
True. Big true.
I'm worried. Can I be worried? I mean, this. Okay.
Why be worried? Don't add the big. I mean, it was one bad game. I'm just saying. I'm pointing out like that's. There's plenty of.
I'm a little worried about Claxton, no Brian. Don't try to get me off my take. I'm worried about Nick Claxton.
Yeah. I mean, that's my take usually, and now I feel like I'm trying to. Yeah. Defend the, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm just worried about Nick Claxton a little bit because, like every rebound that he got was like a rebound that was obviously towards him, right? Like he didn't get any. Like extra rebounds. He didn't fight for 50-50 balls. So he's not providing the rebounding. This game, he was like oddly didn't look very switchy. He was kind of stuck. He didn't show that defensive force that he usually is. And he, at times he flushed it down, but he wasn't perfect. And you kind of almost expect perfection by how good the passes are with James Harden. I don't know, Bri. I'm a little worried. I mean, this is all reaction, you know, first impression reaction theater after the first game. But yeah. I'm a tad bit worried. What's happening in our chat, by the way?
So in the chat, people are pretty heavy questioning. There's a bunch of Bruce Brown questions in a row.
Totally fair.
Why? Where was Bruce? Why was he? I mean, we kind of assumed that he was hurt to the like by the end of that game, and then he came in and played garbage minutes. So he was around there to be had, and we didn't play him. I didn't see how deep our rotation went, but it didn't get too crazy, I don't believe.
Well, basically Nash went 10 deep for most of the game, not counting what happened at the end when Bembry and Cam Thomas and Bruce Brown got into the game after having not played the whole game. It was the starters with Nick Claxton as a starter. And then the bench unit was Javon Carter, Patty Mills, James Johnson, LaMarcus Aldridge and like some Paul Millsap. We didn't get a whole lot of Paul Millsap tonight, which is your boy. I mean, okay. I think we can all be serious here and just be like, obviously this team is still figuring it out. The Bucks are about the, I mean, they literally are the worst matchup to have in game one. It's the night that they get their rings. There's all that energy in the building. The team has the most continuity of all the best teams in the NBA. They have the most continuity. And the Nets are in tremendous upheaval because Kyrie Irving won't get vaccinated. They have a bunch of new pieces on the team. I mean, like James Johnson played serious minutes tonight. LaMarcus Aldridge played a lot of minutes, and he played five games last year. Nick Claxton started, and I don't think he started all that much last year, if he ever did. Javon Carter playing over Bruce Brown. They're TJC Yanks 5, 100% right. The Nets are not back.
Lou wants to talk about LaMarcus Aldridge. And so, there, I mean, like, okay, so.
He's got big play myself into shape energy. Like,
that is
big,
true.
I mean, but that's also. Little that's slow.
So when we were talking about this, like the Claxton issue seemed to be central because of just how the how much of the focal point he was, like, in everything that he did. Also, again, like, we'll continue to, we'll probably stop talking about this at some point, but the conditioning seemed to be like a legitimate issue. We were thinking about, like, okay, so like an adjustment you can make is one, like, stop making him option 1AA while, like, James Harden and Kevin Durant are on the floor. Can we chill? But then the second part of that is like, okay, so let's say you do sub him out and then, like, LaMarcus Aldridge is your sub. If you're looking to have a springy pick and roll dude who's not, like, gassed, I mean, like, that's, you know, you're in a tough spot, because we don't have any other the next version of that is what, like, Blake Griffin, who's also starting next to Nick Claxton, so he's already been playing. I don't know. I would say that, like, my only concern right now is rotationally, like, if Nick Claxton continues to have conditioning issues, how can you get a solid pick and roll partner next to James Harden? I mean, it's worth saying that Bruce Brown was a very effective pick and roll bro last year, but it's obviously, that's not the solution. I mean, he's a great plug and play dude. Everyone loves Bruce. I think that we should have seen more of him as we, like, let their lead expand at many times.
Sure.
And especially, like, the Javon Carter plus Patty Mills things, you know, a lot of what they do is sort of, similar, right? They're like sort of scoring, capable scorer, backup point guard guys. And Javon is obviously like a, you know, more fledgling version of that, although there's reason to believe he could be pretty good. That's a similar player. So I don't see that there's a ton of overlap there. I mean, I don't know where Bruce Brown gets his minutes over. I guess it's James Johnson's minutes or something like that. It's more like of a wing player.
What I kind of think it was that the fact, because James Johnson was playing and he was playing in bench units, he was out there in the floor with LaMarcus Aldridge, who, like, obviously he can hit threes, but he just doesn't shoot threes. I think he shot 1 3 a game with the Nets in those 5 games last year. There were a lot of non-shooters on the floor if you put James Johnson out there. And if you put Bruce Brown out there, that's a really clunky team. So what I think is going to happen potentially early on, we didn't see that much of Paul Millsap, but we saw a decent amount of LaMarcus Aldridge. I think that Nash is going to play Millsap and Bruce Brown together, because Millsap's a fairly reliable three-point shooter. Not great, but fairly reliable. And Bruce Brown isn't. And then James Johnson and LaMarcus Aldridge are going to play together, because James Johnson can't shoot threes, but LaMarcus Aldridge, like, kind of can, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I think it was just like, where are the minutes going to go? They wanted to see Javon Carter. They must really like Javon Carter. There's buzz out of him about camp, about him hitting threes at a pretty high clip. If he plays his defense, I mean, here's the positive. Here's a tangible positive, Brian.
Give it to me. Lay it on me, brother. I need it.
There was a moment in the third quarter. James Johnson was guarding someone pretty fiercely. There was a switch where Javon Carter had to switch on to him, and Javon Carter guarded that person pretty fiercely, and it ended up in a missed shot. Last year, there just weren't that many guys on the team that were, like, visibly caring about defense. And at least on this bench unit, Carter really does. He shows that he is. He's like the kid in class who sits in the front and raises his hand for every question. Like, he wants you to know that he plays defense. Mm-hmm. And James Johnson, I liked, like, his, like, awkward, like, in a good way, his awkward, like, almost Rodion's Karuk's vibes on the floor, that, like, he would do sort of unpredictable things, particularly defensively. KGP in our chat has a great point, and we need to discuss this. He says, I think losing this game isn't a big issue. It's getting blown out and not putting up much of a fight, both tactically from a coaching standpoint, as well as effort. Nash made a very clear decision. If you're listening to us now on the podcast later after tonight, and you didn't finish the game because it was a blowout, with about 3 minutes left, 3.5 minutes left, the Nets were down by only like 14 points. Nash put in the entire bench unit. He put in guys like Cam Thomas and Bembry and Bruce Brown, who hadn't played the whole game. Put him on the floor, and the Bucks still had Giannis and Chris Middleton. And he had done this a lot last year. Nash is pretty quick with deciding, hey, this game's not worth it. We're just not going to put those extra 3 minutes of end of game action on KD and James Harden. What did you make of that, Brian?
Are you furious? I always like that. I like that because it makes me.
You're such a wuss. Brian. This is what's wrong with America, except, like, Nash is Canadian. This is what's wrong with America.
Okay. Well, never give up. Never say die.
I mean,
okay? I would coach. These guys have been playing 48 minutes every game.
Look, when I play kickball, that's my feeling. That's where I agree with you. But when we're, you know, when we've got Kevin Durant's beautiful body to protect, I don't need an extra regular season win. That's getting unlikelier and unlikelier every second that ticks off the scoreboard. In theory, I like what he's, I mean, I totally agree that like, it would be cool. It would have been a cool thing to be competitive around like the third quarter. That would have been that would have been a great time to be super, super competitive. But with like 6 minutes to go with like a 20 point deficit, four minutes was less, right? I mean,
It was about 4 minutes, but it was 14 point deficit. It was within two KD threes and single digits.
Based on what we saw tonight, I have no reason to believe that was like anything was going to happen.
I 100% agree.
In certain spots, it's fine. But like, this is not like, again, you know, we still have our hunky dory, like aw shucks 2019 Nets, like, or like basically the Nets for the last two decades in mind, you know, the days of watching Spencer Dinwiddie, like, you know, get us back into a Houston Rockets game on the road, just chucking threes. Like, we just don't, it doesn't matter that much anymore. Like, I get it. It's good. It's symbolically important. And like, there needs to be some version of that during the season at some points. And I'm sure there will be. I'm sure we will have like improbable comebacks and come back to do it. And we just don't need to force it into a game that's clearly just like a dud. It was a dud centric game. This is a Nets centric podcast, and that was a dud centric game, Mike.
That was a dud centric game. Give me a positive, Brian. Give the people we are all dolphins in an aquarium, and you're throwing us chum.
Yeah. So a couple of positives that I liked. Obviously, like, you know, Harden started off slow, but I think like kind of despite having it stuck in his brain, like I've never
he
seen
was gonna make Nick Claxton a star.
That he was gonna get, he saw your tweet, Mike, about getting Nick Claxton paid, and he's like, I want that to be what he got, that tattooed on his ribs. But his step back three, which had been like very much missing from the preseason and kind of missing from the end of last season too, to some extent, appeared to be back in spades. So that was great. Rob Greco, by the way, just going to shout him out in the chat, was saying Donald Sloan equals 38.4% from three on 1.6 attempts in 2015-2016 season. These are important stats.
Underrated Donald Sloan
these
season.
Are important stats. That's the high 30s.
We need
30s,
to
Mike.
Get Donald Sloan on the pod. I'm really not sure why we haven't yet. Does he still exist? Is he still out there in the world?
Did he ever exist again? Yeah. This could be another Kaiser Sose situation.
Computer generated player.
Jose M says there's still question marks with Nash, which we might need to get to.
People are out with their pitchforks.
People are ready to go.
Nash.
Another positive, Lou says, is Cam's points per game was 18 per 36. That's rookie of the year numbers. That's true. Big true.
I did notice that Cam comes in, immediately takes a pull-up jumper. It's like, dude,
yeah,
come on, man. Understand the moment.
From truly like no man's land, too. Like he was in the middle of nowhere and shot that. I'm trying to think of like other positives. I mean, it's Patty Mills, huge positive.
Loved
what I saw from Patty, obviously.
I was actually, even though I drafted him in our season preview pod, if you're listening to this on the podcast, you're watching us on YouTube right now live. We had a great season preview pod where we drafted the entire roster. Brian and I drafted against each other.
Dude, my squad looks like trash right now compared to that's crusty. Crusty trash.
Even though I drafted Patty Mills, I was a little worried about him the preseason, that like maybe there's like too much of the post-Olympics, like I'm not really in shape anymore vibes going on, but he was fantastic. He was like perfect for what the Nets wanted in this situation. It was just that everyone else on the bench, they didn't do a single, when this team is running at their optimal, you're going to get like the 8 to 10 to 12 points from LaMarcus Aldridge. You're going to get a few Javon Carter threes, and your team, Paul Millsap's going to hit a few threes, and then, you know, all those points add up and the Nets are feeling pretty good about themselves. Besides Patty Mills, no one else did a single thing coming from the bench, and that's a disappointment.
There's a couple other things too. Like, it was, I mean, we got, and these are these are lame sports takes, but I'm here to give them live on YouTube. But like there was some rebounding issues, and there was some just straight up, like, you know, watching the Bucks basically, like, even like Giannis, you know, I have my issues with, because I think his like level of sloppiness like traipses into the dangerous territory. Like I think it's too much.
Yeah. We need to have that conversation.
But like in general, they just bomb they are just flying around recklessly. And I'll say this, like, we talked about this a little bit too, like in our last pod, the zigging and zagging of like adapting to modern offenses has, like, I think the Bucks are pretty much at the forefront of that. Their wing defenders are pretty locked in. Like Pat Connaughton, even, like, I haven't seen many guys who like do legitimate things to prevent Kevin Durant from getting the shot that he wants. And it was straight Pat Connaughton who was pulling this off at times. And Chris Middleton definitely is like up in his space. Like those dudes were shutting shit down.
Yeah. I mean, it's like this whole funny thing of like, there was so much hype about the Nets going into the year, even without Kyrie Irving, they're still the title favorites. Yet the team that won the title that they just played, and that team got their rings, and there's all that emotion in the building. And they get then, I mean, okay, is this a blowout? I mean, it kind of turned into one. The Nets were pretty close.
I'm going to say it was, just because they had us figured out. Like, I just never felt at any point like we were not going to surprise them with anything interesting.
Didn't feel ready. And I'm not even saying this is like they weren't prepared. Like, Steve Nash didn't give them the proper game plan. Mm-hmm. It just didn't feel like the Nets were like fully up and ready and active for this game. Like, they just, there was just like a weird energy coursing through them, where the Bucks felt like they were connected and they were like this team that had just picked up where they just left off in the NBA finals. Nick in our chat said Joe Harris disappeared again. I don't know if I can put anything on Joe, just because this game was so disjointed for most of the time when the Nets were on offense that there was never like a real great flow from, because Harden was focusing so much on getting Nick Claxton the ball. And whenever KD has the ball, I mean, mostly he's looking for his own shot because he knows that his own shot is going to be better than anyone else on the floor. And so the Nets were suffering because Harden, as great of a distributor as he is, was really only looking for Nick Claxton. Like, I'm shocked and appalled. I said this to Brian on the Twitch stream that Brian does. I popped in for a guest appearance.
Shout out to the Twitch stream, by the way. We have fun over there. I mean, I can't put the link, but it's, you know. It's
link in the bio.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. Link in the bio. Yeah. Hop in there. I liked that, even though it was kind of was counterproductive, the fact of how much Nick Claxton was being fed. I did like that Nash left him in there, tried to give him big minutes, put him in tough spots, made him the starter, a surprise starter in game one against the reigning NBA champions, because they're going to need Nick Claxton in April, May, June, and July. They're going to need him to be really, really, really good and in the flow of the team. And we can't, like, this team can't just like mess around and like hope that he'll get there because he plays 4 minutes off the bench in the second quarter. They need him to play with Kevin Durant and James Harden. And it's going to look kind of ugly at times. Not that like Claxton was that bad. Like, I think if you listen to this pod and watch the game, you'd be like, wow, I'm going to look up Nick Claxton's box score and be like, what happened to him?
No, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because it's like relative to what he's been tasked with. And it kind of reminded me of how the DeAndre Jordan treatment from last year that we've speculated was like by design, which is to like play DeAndre to the point where you couldn't help but see the flaws that were basically dictating the decisions of the coaching staff. And like, there's been such a not that they ever give a shit about this kind of stuff, but like there's been such clamoring for, I mean, the Claxton stands, and look, I'm a Claxton stan too, to some degree, not as much as ever some other people,
you hate Nick Claxton.
I don't hate Claxton, but like the idea that he's going to come out and be like people are talking about Grace in the chat is talking about it. I thought he was like Clint, but more offensive, more skilled offensively. So that's, you know, in the small sample size theater, when he's not starting against, you know, second teams and stuff, like he can look that way, but it is like a meaningful difference to be like, if you're going to like run him out as a focal point of your offense, you're now we are going to start to know, like, you're going to have a bad time. He needs to be a complimentary player. As of yet, he's still so young. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm just kind of memeing with the Steve Nash's giving him the DeAndre treatment, because I actually authentically think, like, they're just like, we actually really depend on this dude this season. Like, he needs to get into shape pronto. And the only way you're going to do that is by playing a lot of minutes against real competition. Speaking of which,
yes,
we're playing Philly on Hell. Angel C on Hell is saying, is Philly a big game? And Sean Goodfriend highlights the fact that Claxton's about to guard Joel Embiid.
Yeah. Thoughts? But is he going to guard Ben Simmons? Is Ben Simmons going to play in this game? I mean, you tell me you saw
of course
the chef's kiss Ben Simmons. I mean, so if you can take anything from today, if you view today as in totality, this was a good day for the Nets, because what is happening in Philadelphia with Ben Simmons is ripping that team apart, ripping it apart. It is so delightful if you're a Nets fan, what is happening in Philadelphia. Every general manager, from what Rafi Stone in Houston last year by leaking out to reporters that we're willing to get comfortable with James Harden, to what Daryl Morey is doing in Philadelphia, where they're like, we're going to fine Ben Simmons if he doesn't play for us, and when he comes back to play, we're going to play him, and then if he doesn't practice, we'll throw him out of practice. But Ben is going to conform to what we want. All of those general managers don't have any clue what to do in these situations, because they're not in the locker room and they're not on the practice court. What is happening with Ben Simmons, where he gets thrown out of practice because he doesn't want to practice? It's because you're forcing this guy to play for a team he doesn't want to. And we can all make fun of Ben Simmons for doing that, for not being a professional, but they are allowing the 76ers are allowing the situation to play out, because they absolutely did not handle the Ben Simmons situation properly. They could have done it.
Yes. Can I say something though? Ben Simmons is, so he obviously like heard everyone talking about, like, why don't you just do what James Harden did and just kind of like dog it, like phone it in, whatever. And he just even like sucks at that. Like he overdid that, to the extent that he's now suspended for a game or whatever. Like, you're not supposed to suck. You're not supposed to like sow discord and like suck that bad that it's like a distraction. You're supposed to like, you know, plausibly suck. That's what you're supposed to do. you even fucked that up. So yeah, I mean, it's a joy to watch. You can tell it's making this. It was a good time for you to bring that up, because that is a source of Shannon Freud and glee. After this.
Okay, so I sent this out Twitter poll, and I want to ask you, Brian, what's a tougher situation? And be honest, Kyrie Irving's vaccination stance, or Ben Simmons' eyes.
It's a Simmons eye, yeah.
His like, Simo. Hey, I just don't want to be here. Like, Kyrie wants to play for the Nets, but he refuses to get vaccinated. And he may, in fact, in the future, and then all is well. Ben Simmons just doesn't want to play for the 76ers and will only be good if he gets traded. What's a worse situation for a team?
I think the Sixer situation is pretty undeniably worse. Like, there, it is theoretically possible that something happens one way or another with Kyrie Irving, and then it's like, eh, it's fine. I was listening on the Ringer podcast where the guys were talking about, as Rajah Bell was talking about, like, if this gets to like 15 or 20 games, and like maybe the Nets come out slow to start the season or something, or even maybe worse, they come out like blazing hot, although that doesn't seem as likely at the moment, but that it's going to like have that's going to mean something to people, and they're going to be upset. Actually, one thing that we didn't talk about, and not to make this a whole Kyrie divergent thing, because I
sure
don't want to do it, but like, I was listening to that podcast, and Roger Bell is actually very good. Super recommend. I hadn't actually listened to that show before. But he was like,
smart. He's friends with Steve Nash. So,
oh, perfect.
When you listen to him, you can, if he's talking about the Nets, you can kind of pick up some stuff from Steve that Steve Nash may have told him. Because Roger Bell, Steve Nash tried to hire Roger Bell as an assistant coach for the Nets.
Right. And so he was talking about, like, look, you know, I have a, you know, my own sort of career in mind when I think about this stuff with Kyrie Irving, like what position I would have been in. And from my perspective, like, I was a guy who was like often getting offered, you know, somewhere in the 10 million range to go play somewhere somewhat competitive, or like take this Vetsman to go, like, you know, play for the Miami Heat when he was playing and like win that championship. And he was like, if I had gone to the Miami Heat and like Dwayne Wade had not played for, in my opinion, not a very good reason, that would have been beef. That would have been a big problem for me, because I've now taken a paycheck cut, and now we have our, you know, this championship window seems less likely. And that's the whole reason I signed up to be here. So he's like, dude, like, they got to figure this out faster than you might realize before people start to be like, oh, you're just going to now pop back in, eh? Like, what's, you know, after now we've caused a whole big rift and caused some problems. I just think that it was an interesting insight to be like, that's where some of the player discord can actually start to get problematic long-term. But anyways, the whole
talked about it, where it's like the players have to answer questions for Kyrie, and it's not like Kyrie's going to do weekly press conferences from his Zoom office, right? Which he probably should do.
Can you at least live stream the touch football? I mean, if you're going to be a voice of the voiceless, which is honestly the touch football community, we talked about this. I haven't heard from them in years. So if you're going to at least.
So Kyrie is succeeding as we're talking.
Give me a live stream into, I just want to see what's going on. Who's playing who, you know, who's putting up numbers.
If you're friends with Kyrie Irving and he says, hey, like, you know his situation, he says, hey, do you guys want to play touch football? Don't you think you, like, as a friend would be like, Kyrie, I think you should stay home. I don't think you should play touch football while you're losing $16, $18 million a year.
Dude, if you're Kyrie Irving's friend, you're already fucking, you're just like, dude, tell me what to do. just tell me anything.
I'll show up whatever time, whatever thing that you want to do right now. Yeah. I'm along for the ride here. Yeah, that's exactly. What I'm at. Exactly. A lot of people are in our YouTube chat, and appreciate all of you, are saying Ben Simmons' situation is worse. I just think it is.
It's super worse. It's way worse.
And also, I mean, we're not even new. This is like the Nets roster without Kyrie Irving is better than the Sixers roster without Ben Simmons. And I think there are probably more teams in the NBA that would trade for Ben Simmons than would for Kyrie Irving. But the Sixers need to get something back for Ben Simmons that is like just below an all-star, if not an actual all-star, to maintain this championship contention. Where the Nets, if they like just flip Kyrie Irving for, you know, like a pretty good, like a Spencer Dinwiddie type, like, you know, pretty good bench player, hey, that would be a massive win at this point, because we don't know what's happening with Kyrie Irving. Nate Thompson with sage advice. And Nate, I appreciate you. I think everyone needs to chill. It's the first game of the season. We all wanted to see Claxton get his minutes, and he got some. It'll take time for him to adjust to a new feature role. I think, yes.
It's the only good take so far.
I agree. Yeah. I should calm down.
Nate, come on the show.
But I'm not going to calm down. Just watching him go against Giannis and Brooke. And everyone else in the Bucks, it's like it was just tough to see, because he doesn't have that fighter gear in him, and you kind of need that if you're playing the Bucks, or if you're playing Joel Embiid, or whoever else, if you're playing the Lakers in the finals. Like, this is the thing that the Nets fans have obsessed over ever since KD finally got healthy and played starting last year, was like, who's going to play center. Like, at one point, it was obviously Jared Allen, and they trade Jared Allen for James Harden. Who's going to play center in the big moments? And it's good. Thank you, Nate. You're basically on the show to begin with. It's good that – I think it's good that Nash stuck with him. That stuck with Claxton and was like, hey, let's keep working at it. You're not going to get better by sitting on the bench. Another Steve Nash coaching wunderkind.
He's got the big picture in mind, guys. He doesn't deal in momentary timeouts or substitutions. He's got the big picture in mind. That's both true and also a troll. That's what I've just said.
James Johnson, let's just run through the roster and just give us.
All right, we'll do a quick run.
Varnished, yeah. Not unvarnished. I want your varnished takes. James Johnson. I have no reaction.
Great,
no,
great facial hair. Obviously, yeah. Couldn't stop fouling everybody in sight.
I appreciated that.
Yeah, which actually I'll say
he was more athletic than what I was prepared for. Like I thought he was going to be pretty washed, and he's not washed. It was like there's definitely athleticism in there.
His legs are there. Yeah,
there's like I think it's like a little Rodion's Karuxis. Yeah. You know, it's a little chaotic. He's obviously a way smarter player than Rodion's was because James Johnson's been in the NBA for a decade, but
he knows when to turn it off a little bit. That X factor.
And I liked it, you know, but I do wonder if you're looking at a rotation of like James Johnson, Paul Millsap, LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin, Nick Claxton, and technically Bruce Brown, it was a statement to be like James Johnson's like our backup power forward. That was a statement by Steve Nash.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Paul Millsap, I feel like I didn't
see Paul Millsap. Don't even remember him, to be honest with you. I remember him passing up a three at the end of a shot clock that he should have shot, and I was like, that was it. That's all I can really truly remember.
Were you happy Javon Carter played as much as he did, or are you the Bruce Brown crowd?
I don't know that they play the same position. I don't think that they're the ones that you're intrigued. I honestly think that it's James Johnson and Bruce Brown that are fighting for those minutes, because they seem more off the ball X factor bros, in whatever shape or size they come in. So I did like the Javon Carter moments. I don't I think he's still kind of finding his way, but he seems so confident in his ball handling and there's no reason to doubt it at the moment. It's just nice to see a guy, we often talk about this, like Mike James's in his ability to like initiate, but like to nowhere. It was just like initiation with just like maybe a random floater that like flies out of his ass. Like that was sort of his version of initiating an offense, where Javon Carter can do something. He can like keep his dribble. He can kind of like squirrel about a little bit. I don't know that he's like the deftest playmaker quite yet. Obviously this is like first game one. So like, it's tough to be your third string point guard who's playing significant minutes suddenly. So I get that, but yeah, from like, just like a dude watching basketball perspective, he seems pretty good. He seems fluid. And I feel confident when he has the ball, not more so than Patty, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of said this before, but like there were just too many guys on the roster last year, which a team that probably would have won the championship if everyone was healthy. I'm almost like 100% sure they would have won the championship. Mm-hmm. But there was just too many guys on the roster last year that didn't really care about defense on any level or didn't have the 1-2 coach speak. And I appreciate, it's like if you break up with someone and the next person that you start dating is like kind of the opposite, you know, or the coach who gets fired, the former coaches, like has a strong grip on the team, and the second one is like much more player friendly. I appreciate seeing Javon Carter's showy style of defense, even if it's not all that effective. I still think Javon Carter's best, where he's going to flourish, is if he's playing next to James Harden and he's getting open threes, because he's never really going to be a guy who's going to create. Like, I agree with you where he, like, he has a ball handling skill where it's not sloppy. He can kind of get you into the sets that you need to, but he still really needs to be playing with someone who's a real point guard, who can actually run an offense, who can actually create, where he can then feed off of that person and then guard the opposing team's point guard.
Can I point out too, like, a thing happening in the chat? There's Luke Gray says Harden looked great tonight, finished through contact, and one play is knocking down threes. And then there's people like Chinny who's saying, I am kind of concerned for Harden. It seemed like that was a player where there's a couple of some divisive takes happening in the chat, Mike. Where do you fall on the spectrum of Harden good v Harden bad?
It felt like, I'm not going to bring up the Nick Claxton thing like a ton more, because we did it so many times, but it felt like Harden was trying shit out during the game on like a preseason-y level, where like if he was really locked in, if the team itself was locked into trying to getting this win, he would have been much more aggressive on getting his own shot. I mean, he only shot the ball 16 times, which for him is not that much, but he was 28-8. I think that was the number for him. Yeah, I mean, he didn't look that great, but he's also, I mean, we've talked about this before, he's not this guy who, like, he also kind of plays himself into shape, even though he does do yoga like you do, Brian.
That's all I do. Yoga and pull-ups, that's it.
But he plays himself into shape. And so this is early season. I think that's just, like, my big takeaway is that the Bucks, because of the level, the amount of players that were on the team last year that returned for this year, they have this connective and this fluidity, where the Nets, because of last year, was such a mess because of injuries. They had the Kyrie situation in training camp and preseason. They start a starting lineup that had never, the team, those guys had never played together. Durant, Blake Griffin, Nick Claxton, Joe Harrison, James Harden, they never played together last year. It just wasn't a cohesive team. And, you know, at times they had a shot of actually getting a dub. I mean, there wasn't that close, but they could have. Brian, some news for you. You ready for this?
Yeah.
James Harden, when asked about not signing his extension by the deadline, because he had the opportunity to sign a four-year extension. I love it here. I feel at home. It's nothing to worry about. For me individually, I just want to focus on this year. I don't plan on leaving this organization.
Nice.
Does that make you feel better?
That is helpful. I will say one take that I just came up with on the fly here when I was talking, when I was thinking about this, was I will say that, like, Harden seems to prioritize, like, integrating other people into the offense. But what I kind of really want to see is Harden and KD vibing. I would like to see their vibe on offense just slightly, because it seems like we have, like, okay, cool, we have these, like, two atomic bombs of NBA offensive weapons. Let's, like, separate them, and so that, like, we can stagger their minutes and always have an atomic bomb on the floor. And I want a double atomic bomb. I want a the MOAB. What was it called? The mother of all bombs? Yeah, a MOAB.
Wow.
I want a MOAB. Magneto says hi, by the
way. Yeah, Brian, for the podcast audience, Brian is holding up his cat, Magneto. Yeah. Look at that cutie. I don't know. This is not really manufactured tension, because I'm sure neither of us are going to push back. I do think you need to have one or the other.
Oh, you want to fight me on this? You want to start some shit?
Because Kyrie Irving is not still on the team. If you had Kyrie, then that would be great. If you had, I mean, you could always have two on the floor at one time, and then the other one could be sitting.
I think this is the new paradigm where we don't have a third star, and we are always kind of like having two guys out there, and now we don't. We have oftentimes one of the other out there. I think that's the fundamental difference.
I mean, Durant said this because we're getting post game reaction from the players. He said we can't let another team shoot the ball 20 more times than us, and that is an accurate statement. I mean, that, like, we typically don't
hustle, rebounding,
We don't like that's not a stat discussed all that much during games is like the amount of the shot difference between the two teams. But the Nets, it's going to be a little bit of a problem because they're not as good of a rebounding team. And the Bucks are a really good rebounding team specifically. Like Giannis had like three offensive rebounds in one possession.
I will say this is a little bit of a misleading stat, though, because if you have a very efficient offense, you are going to have less attempts.
Yes.
So there is a little bit to your point. Yes, there is something there. It really depends on the match.
But the Bucks they destroyed the Nets on the boards.
Agreed. I mean, and in this case, I would say like that, you would be able to point to that set and be like, yeah, that's evidence of what was actually happening out here, but not always, I would say.
We haven't talked about Blake Griffin yet. He took a charge, so I'm happy.
The charge, he got like annihilated on a pretty hectic dunk attempt. There's a lot of that. Like people are going splat everywhere. There's some hectic plays. But yeah, I mean, in general, everyone looked like he was throw him in there with the other crusty vets who came out super crusty tonight.
Your whole team that you
drafted. My whole team that I love and will die for. But yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You are Steve Nash. Okay. For this game, you started Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Blake Griffin, and Nick Claxton. Are you trotting out the same starting lineup against the 76ers, or are you thinking of a different starting lineup and who would you maybe put forward? Because I would say for myself,
I don't think you can sit. Sorry, you're going to say something. And I just came right. I came flying in like a kindergartner who can't keep himself under control. Go ahead.
So the only thing I would say is that I'm a little surprised LaMarcus Aldridge didn't start, just like out of respect. He feels like a guy who kind of wants that like level of respect. I mean, he played five games for the Nets last year and he started all of them.
I understand.
And we don't really remember that, but yeah. He did. Those things kind of mattered to players like LaMarcus Aldridge, but he didn't start in this game. Yeah. Nick Claxton did. I almost wonder if it would be obviously better for Nick Claxton's growth if he started against Embiid and went against Embiid for the game and like continue to get those bumps and bruises, you know, what is it? Something makes diamonds stronger or something.
Pressure
makes diamonds. Something. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I do read Nike t-shirts, but, you know, I knowing Steve Nash, he probably will have a different starting lineup and it may be Bruce Brown who didn't play basically at all.
I wouldn't put it past him, but I also don't think it's the right thing to do. I mean, like Claxton, yes, whatever was being targeted, but his problems weren't, because of like what he's actually good at. Like he was still good at playing defense. Like he did the thing that he's supposed to be doing. He just like was being put in a weirdly highlighted position that should not have been happening. So like it would be, I think, bad for two reasons. Bad because like, well, if you go back out there and run the same idea that we're going to prioritize Claxton, that's like, that shows me that like, oh God, something's terribly, terribly wrong here. But, beyond that, it's a problem for his own like personal growth. It would just suck to be like, well, you had your one start and it didn't go well, so now like LaMarcus has that job forever. Like if LaMarcus gets it, he's never coming back. So yeah, for that reason, I think he's probably going to come back out game two, I think.
Yeah, we have not stated Nick Claxton's stats, and I will do that right now. 12.7 rebounds on 6 of 9 shooting. No turnovers, though it felt like he turned over the ball five times. It's just like because he didn't really catch it. He went to the line. He missed all of his free throws. His free throw shot is so ugly. And
I don't know what Korver had made it worse. What is Korver doing? He's he's a mole. He's a saboteur.
He did play for the Bucks and right.
The Sixers.
He's been sabotaging this team ever since they traded him for a fax machine.
Yes.
Maybe this is his long con. This is his, what's that movie? Old boy.
Yeah, where he puts the guy in a room so he can do incestuous things. So I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil that one. That's a family flick right there.
That's a family flick. Mike, we've been going 45. How much longer do you want to go? I'm down to go longer, but
no, I feel pretty good. I mean, we didn't really hit Patty Mills enough, but let's just give him proper due. 7 from 11 from the field, 7 from the 3-point line, 21 points. If they didn't have this like amazing, immaculate Patty Mills game, it would have been an even sadder night. But he was fantastic, and he really supercharged the minutes that he was in. I mean, I think he's the only net who had, LaMarcus Aldridge and Patty Mills are the only guys who had a positive plus minus. Your boy Javon Carter was minus 29 in his 19 minutes. not super great, but Kevin Durant was a minus 20. Kevin Durant's one of the greatest players of all time. Durant was missing free throws. He was 3 for 6 from the free throw line. The Nets really didn't get to the line. Like, Harden only got to the line and shot 4 free throws. That's kind of where, I mean, that's really the problem for me in this game, is just that like the Bucks could get inside the paint and then they could dish it out to shooters. The Nets just didn't like do that enough. They didn't put enough pressure on the Bucks. They only scored 104 points. That's not that good. But Cam Thomas got his debut, and he scored 2 points in 4 minutes. He's a star.
We're not going to touch it, but Jefferson Belfort says, what do you realistically think of the Kyrie situation? Oh, boy. We have so much time to talk about it. Nobody has a good take on this.
There's so many people. I'll just do a quick thing. There's so many people that say, like, David Aldridge wrote this. I think John Hollinger wrote this in The Athletic. If you want to be an Athletic reader and subscriber, go to theathletic.com.
Or also, smush subscribe on the YouTube if you're hanging out, by the way. Smush. I'm supposed to tell people to do that.
So many people are saying they think Kyrie Irving's going to get the shot at some point. I think that's only a guess. Like, I don't think that's coming, because Kyrie doesn't really have like a well-sourced network of people that you can reliably get information out of Kyrie's camp, right? That doesn't really exist. I do wonder, though, this game happened, and I would hope Kyrie Irving watched it, and does he feel a tinge of regret for not getting it? Adam Silver also, Luke Gray says Adam Silver directly addressed Kyrie's situation.
He more likely feels a tinge of turf toe, Mike, because he's been playing football all afternoon again.
And again, Brian and I's position is very simple. We don't care about him as a basketball player. It's about him as a person.
Yeah.
And Kyrie should just get the shot because it's good for you and the people around you. Like, that's also, we don't talk about that enough. It's like, it's just good for you.
You're going high road on it, and I love it, but nobody believes you, Mike.
It's good for you.
I mean, I believe that part, but I don't believe you. That's not the reason you care about Kyrie.
Even if Kyrie is not scared of COVID for himself, it's good for the people around him who are older and who maybe they have the shot, but then, you know, they're more in danger of having a breakthrough case because they're around someone who isn't vaccinated.
Yeah.
That's a hot take for the end.
That's a great take. Lord Loss says, shout out to Lord Loss. Good name. Remember at the beginning of last season when we went 6-6 and everyone freaked out, we'll be fine. True. Big true. I love when people have neutral fat takes. You know, like I was saying, like a brie cheese, a nice, we have heartburn after
Brie's
tonight.
Not neutral. Brie is.
Brie is neutral. Well, you think it's acidic?
No, but it's too creamy. It's so creamy. It's
that's the point. That's a neutral fat. It's a creamy fat. Cream is a neutral fat.
The experience of brie, I think if you walked around the street and said, is brie a neutral cheese? I think most people would say, like, brie is an exotic cheese to most people. Exotic.
That's the scariest thing I've heard all night, that brie would be an exotic cheese for people. Mike, take us out of here.
Thank you all so much for being here on the YouTube stream. We'll be doing so much and so many more of these throughout the season. It's such a fun experience to have you all in here. We can chat with you directly. Find us, podcast, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You could do that as well. Also, if you become an Athletic subscriber, theathletic.com/glueguys, you can listen to our podcast without ads. There just being no ads in them. So that's super cool. And smush the follow on the YouTube. Because again, we're going to be doing a lot more of these. Brie is the Switzerland of cheese.
It's neutral, buddy. Says. That's neutral. You get it? Alan says Brie equals mayo equals neutral. I'm telling you, Mike. Again, we don't need to drill you because you have the worst.
I think psychologically, it's not.
It's just not.
Because I'm telling you, I'm a man of the people.
You've eaten for 20 years is bagel bites.
Was your high school public or private?
Both. I went to both the public and private
schools. And then where did you graduate from?
Public. Yeah.
What happened to your... Wait.
That's...
Where did you start? Did you start private?
I got kicked out of the private school. Boy, come on, let's go. Road dog. Let's fucking go. Fuck that private school.
All right. Well, that's a great way to end the show. Thanks, Brian. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. We'll probably clip that for the thing, but hey guys, chat, thank you so much for hanging out. If you still haven't smushed any of the things, I'll probably go right back on Twitch because I was planning on watching this Lakers game. So see you guys over there if you want to hop on and meet me there. Otherwise, we're out. Jason Kidd style free throw kisses to each and every one of you. We'll see you after maybe the Sixers game. Right? I don't know. We'll see you. Bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.